So alternative data itself is gradually being peppered in, but a lot of this goes back to the quant revolution in the 80s. Something a lot of people overlook is that a lot of the mathematics and algorithms behind artificial intelligence today were really derived from things like statistical physics. And so there's a lot of math behind things like thermodynamics and equilibria and everything else that are involved in artificial intelligence. And so the quants back in the 80s utilized some of this. And gradually this branched out into what we now call AI. And part of it is intertwined with alternative data.
Just stop it. The run-of-the-mill, cheesy, humdrum bullshit status quo just tires me out. What fascinates me are the industry disruptors, the superhuman frontiersmen or women with arrows in their backs who go through hell to achieve their goals. They'll go through anything to make it. They bathe in hell and high water, a cut above. They're intolerant to mediocrity, the status quo, and yet they're the nicest people you'll ever meet. This is Disruption Interruption. Join me as we meet and learn from those mavericks, rebels, and business leaders that aren't afraid to piss off the establishment in order to make radical change for good. This show is sponsored by Johto PR, the disruptive anti-PR firm that murders your competition with cinder blocks and cyanide. Welcome back, everybody, to Disruption Interruption. I'm your host, KJ, and we're here today to talk to another industry leader that has steered off the lame, tired path of the status quo. Now, today's guest is a scholar turned entrepreneur and a visionary who's at the forefront of disrupting the financial technology sector. Named one of the top 10 most influential leaders in biotechnology in 2021, he's a force to be reckoned with in the entrepreneurial landscape. Remarkably, he scaled and sold a company he founded at just 25. But his most significant contribution lies in the creation of an award-winning alternative data platform that bridges the gap between scientific innovation and financial technology. You were wondering how I was going to combine those, right? During the corona crash of 2020, his innovative approach propelled his company to outperform some of the largest hedge funds, catapulting it to a multi-million-dollar valuation. So in this episode, we are going to explore the transformative power of alternate data in finance, covering everything from social media sentiments to satellite imagery and how advanced data science techniques are providing actionable insights for investors. So join us in welcoming a true trailblazer, founder and CEO of GZI, Sean Adler. Yeah. He's waving, everyone. This is a quiet disruptor. I had to pull him out from behind the technology to come talk to us today. Sean, thank you. How are you?
I'm well, and thank you for the introduction. It was quite generous.
Yes, you are welcome, and we mean every word of it.
Thanks.
We have a whole team that sits there and pores over all your data and then writes these amazing intros. So, Sean, you know, we're going to talk about some things that people, even our technology listeners, which, you know, we have quite a bit, really don't know a lot about. But before we get into this whole thing on alternative data and really pick your brain, you know, how do you see disruptive innovation? Like, how do you apply that in your life?
So I think at this point, I have been around long enough that I view this as almost conventional instead of disruptive. But I think that I sort of utilize the drive to pave the way forward into something that I have never seen as a means of disruptive innovation. And I think it's the journey of continuous discovery and sort of the rush as well, to be perfectly honest. And I think that that kind of has driven the journey and has sort of pieced things together along the way.
I actually love that you said that. It's the rush. I've never heard a disruptor admit that, but it's so true.
Oh,
it is a rush.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So it's continuous curiosity, continuous learning, and the rush. And the rush comes when you find something, right? Aha.
Yeah.
Well, you know, for you, what's been that continuous curiosity with alternative data. And as you go along, like, okay, first of all, let's back it up. Let's define for our audience, our listeners, alternative data.
Okay. Alternative data is financial data that is not directly related to finance, but it pertains to the financial services industry. It's somewhat loosely defined at this point in time, but it's available from, you know, the NASDAQ to a couple of investment banks are actually hiring biotech analysts now, like Bloomberg, RBC. And so it's definitely emerging.
You know, you said it's loosely defined, which I appreciate that. Some of it's a bit arbitrary, right? What's considered as alternative data. I mean, there can be all kinds. Give some examples of the more prominent or used and then other alternative data that could be used in the future.
Okay. So a lot of the alternative data we work with is more scientifically derived. Some of it's time zones. Some of it's a little bit different. But a lot of things you'll see currently might be, you know, tweet score. It could be even credit card data, depending on the company. And so there is an enormous amount of variation, but at the end of the day, everything is sort of channeled back into the financial markets.
I find it interesting that you mentioned tweet score. I mean, I'm in the media, you know, PR biz, right? The Twitter has been, you know, has more verified journalist accounts than celebrities, you know, together, right? But social media is a driving sentiment, right?
Yeah.
What's the significance of a tweet score in alternative data?
Game stonk.
Mm.
And so it's short squeezes like that. And so what happens when a bunch of people follow a tweet, even if, you know, the action is misinformed, is that the volume of shares that are purchased jumps, and that results in a giant spike in the price. And so that's kind of what happened during the whole GameStonk phenomenon and the whole Wall Street Bets thing on Reddit. And it's one of the reasons why people are utilizing it. I have mixed feelings about it personally, but it still, you know, works halfway decently.
I mean, we think of stocks and so forth, right? I mean, it's based on confidence, right, in the market, a lot of it. And so when you look at that and you look at the public opinion, right, that can spread like wildfire. You said it could not be true, but it can definitely impact the volume of shares purchased, right?
Yeah.
But as a technologist and someone that's very scientifically oriented, I imagine that there is a very strategic way of taking all this alternate data and making it for use rather than just a sea of information.
I mean, yeah. So we initially started as a small algo trading fund. And so we built out what worked into a data platform with some analytics. And at this point, we've had more institutions involved with like selling the company or more media outlets involved than I actually have had actual customers. And so we're actually just beginning to get a decent amount of feedback. But we spent an obscene amount of time in due diligence meetings with investment banks and everything, sort of reviewing the data.
What kind of data are they very interested in?
I mean, I think they're primarily like interested in just kind of the results behind the data. And so a lot of these groups are more concerned with results than they are with, you know, any kind of data in specific. And I think that that's kind of what they're chasing.
Got it. And so when you say they're more concerned with the results than the data specific, can you give me an example?
Wall Street is very much done on a pound per pound basis. And so, you know, they're looking for raw percent gain, and they're less concerned with sort of how that's obtained and more concerned with if. And I think that it's not the most heartwarming sentiment, but it's kind of true.
So when you say it's kind of true, what do you mean by that?
The whole Gordon Gekko stereotype and, you know, like Wolf of Wall Street is halfway true. There are some characters out there, but that may be a story for another time.
Well, it definitely gives us some information, right?
Yeah.
You know, this particular alternative data, how is this changing, transforming, or going to change the fintech industry and hedge funds and the way certain things are looked at?
So It already has in terms of how data is structured. And so, for instance, things like asset-backed cryptocurrency is beginning to emerge. This is more in terms of like private sector at the moment. You know, they're doing tokenization for a lot of startups and secondary trading, but it's beginning to reach the public market. And so FTX had tokenized shares of companies on the US Stock Exchange and the Hong Kong East Stock Exchange before it blew up. And they now have, you know, new derivatives like carbon derivatives or ethanol futures alongside, you know, regular futures like oil and whatnot. And so the way that different products are being structured now is one of the main uses. And that's not directly related to raw efficacy, but it's something that people are seeing more and more of.
What is the continuous curiosity for you?
I mean, I think it's not a series of rushes. So I initially started trading part-time in grad school, and then I started getting it right, and I wanted to explore and quantify how. And I think that it was sort of just initially seeing if I could do it, and then also, you know, like, if you can beat the stock market, then there's no harm in that. And so gradually, I think I just kind of kept building it out, and I would just, you know, analyze, see what worked, discard what didn't. And over the course of roughly 5 or so years, you know, it went from this tiny, tiny LLC trading operation to a company that's filed raises with the SEC that was being sold for, you know, tens of millions, and, you know, just evolved rapidly in about 5 years. And so I honestly am not entirely sure specifically how all of it happened, but I think I kind of just ran with it. There's like a handful of, you know, analytics files that can kind of quantify it. But I think that a lot of it was just kind of moving with the flow.
You know, when you say moving with the flow, right? Like, you have a background in biotechnology, right? And, you know, you've got this scientific mindset and you're in the financial technology sector. Like, how did you marry those together? Like, you have a very interesting viewpoint that enables you to see things differently.
I essentially did dual specializations when I was a grad student at Hopkins. And so I split it between biotech entrepreneurship and bioinformatics. And so you see it in a lot of entrepreneurs. For instance, you know, Kalanick, before he dropped out, he had a dual major in computer programming and business. It helps you see both ends. And I think that's kind of the background that got everything into place, because I took a lot of coursework in, you know, genomic sequencing, statistics, et cetera. And then I also took some, you know, courses in like finance, marketing, and so on. It's the combination of all of that that sort of allowed me to mix and match and to piece it together into something a little bit different.
Yeah, you've definitely done that. And, you know, traditionally, the financial markets and hedge funds have relied on what kind of data?
Oh, I mean, just financial stats, valuations. I think everybody plays with econometrics and time series. And some of it's valid, but it's more about how you use it.
As far as like alternative data that comes in, is this becoming more prevalent? Is it being peppered in? Like, how is this integrating into the financial markets and the systems?
So alternative data itself is gradually being peppered in, but a lot of this goes back to the quant revolution in the 80s. Something a lot of people overlook is that a lot of the mathematics and algorithms behind artificial intelligence today were really derived from things like statistical physics. And so there's a lot of math behind things like thermodynamics and equilibria and everything else that are involved in artificial intelligence. And so the quants back in the 80s utilized some of this. And gradually, this branched out into what we now call AI. And part of it is intertwined with alternative data. And so alternative data itself is being utilized more. There's some larger companies that are doing it, but it's still, I'd say, like at an earlier stage. There's interest, but it's not as prominent.
Alternative data is not as prominent, you're saying?
I mean, not yet. I think that it's going to be integrated more in the near future, but it's still something that really blew up a lot in 2020. And a lot of that was the biotech stocks. And I think that that's what also drove some of the other alternative data, even if it was just credit card data or if it was, you know, something like tweet scores as well. And, you know, give it 5 years and I think it'll be very mainstream.
You know, I find that fascinating. And the fact that you put a timeline to it, which I can see. I have heard so many innovators and disruptors talk about COVID being such a big catalyst. And in this particular, that period of time, right? You're mentioning that here, right? With what you were talking about and now alternative data being more prevalent, right?
Yeah.
So before that, alternative data wasn't as prevalent?
I mean, I don't think people necessarily were as interested beforehand. I mean, I'm sure it was out there. You know, I think a lot of these concepts probably started, you know, coming into play 5-10 years before it, but it takes a while before something goes from technological obscurity to the mainstream.
Right. This is definitely not mainstream yet, right?
No, but there's always time.
There's always time, yes. It is being looked at in certain realms, like hedge funds and so forth. You know, can you give us more information like on these tweet scores? And I know you mentioned when we were speaking just how Elon Musk really like uses or manipulates or whatever this alternative data, part of his strategy. Can you give me more information on that?
I would say utilize more than manipulate. And so when he does all these obscene things on Twitter, he really knows what he's doing and he's probably measuring it as well. And so I think there was one time when he measured some kind of a tweet volatility score and then threw up a graph of it via time series on Twitter. And so when he shows up with a flamethrower on social media, like he knows what he's doing. And he's done other things where he's, you know, thrown up these cute little, you know, GIFs where they have a kid dressed as a transformer that turns into a car and, you know, everything else. And so it's very calculated, but it's also incredibly creative.
Yeah, it is very, very calculated. Just going back to the purpose of social media, right? And things like that. Part of driving public opinion and so forth. And when you talk about alternative data being more mainstream in several years, how do you predict companies will start to use platforms like X and other things like that to quote unquote drive alternative data?
I think that they would spend more time measuring outputs from social media than they would allowing it to sort of drive the field. What I do see happening is that I think they'll start to integrate it a lot into their regular software. So traditional brokerage software has some basic things for screening financial metrics. You know, they now include tweet scores. And so what I think will happen is that as the sector matures, it will become more deeply integrated across platforms.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And what do you think is the top alternative data that's going to be more deeply integrated first?
I honestly have no idea. I mean, so I know I can't remember if it was a unicorn or not. There's some giant alternative data platform, but I honestly don't know if this is like actually legitimate or if like a bunch of VCs just wound up throwing a ton of money behind something and it sells well enough. And so I'm still not sure to this day. I would say structured products, then brokerage software.
Yeah, interesting. It's so new, it's hard to predict what's going to happen there.
I suppose, yeah.
Yeah. So what are your plans with GZI? And why don't you tell our listeners what GZI is in a nutshell?
So GZI is an alternative data platform that was largely derived from trading results. And there's a decent amount of information online. If you Google Sean Adler GZI, a lowercase, there are a bunch of earlier press reviews, some things in Forbes, but it's essentially a data platform. And if you're interested, we would love your feedback. We'd be happy to give you a free trial in exchange for you helping us build something better for you.
Got it. And so what are your plans with GZI? And where are you going?
I'm not entirely sure. I think there's a part of me that's happy to just kind of sit on the IP. And so, you know, I'll own the copyright for 70 years after my own death. And so there's a part of me that wants to keep pushing and to grow bigger. And there's a part of me that's just like, you know, I could take a break and then just come back to this whenever. And so I think I'll gradually see. At this point, I'm sort of playing it by ear.
Got it. You're a man of mystery, Sean.
Not quite Austin Powers, but thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Is there anything else as far as like alternative data that you would like our listeners to know? I mean, you've given us a lot of history of it, you know, from the 80s, right? You've given us some interesting information about tweet scores, credit card data. What else do you think our listeners would want to know about this? Because I know they're extremely curious.
I think at this point, I'm honestly more interested in sort of what listeners would like from us than I am with, you know, how we should describe it to them. And I think that the two are somewhat intertwined.
When people come to GZI, right, what are the things that they ask you for? What are the things that they're interested in? It seems to me like it's such a burgeoning area that they probably need a lot of guidance and have a lot of like incipient questions about what do we do? What could we do?
So we've done a lot of institutional involvement. And so I think that when we were in discussions to get acquired, it sounded like they essentially wanted to integrate us into their platform, their mailing list. I think it's a lot of the time, it's mainly investment banks, more on the boutique side, that, you know, sort of want to utilize it and integrate it into their own work.
Got it. And, you know, we talked about earlier in the past, like, I don't know if GZI does this as much or utilizes this data, but like satellite imagery, right? I mean, you mentioned credit card transactions, and I think you even mentioned mobile app usage, right? How did those particular sets of data impact how like hedge funds and institutions look at the markets and look at companies?
I honestly have no idea. I think that if there was a hedge fund and they had an app, they're probably collecting your geolocation data. But aside from that, I can't say with confidence that they're probably trading with it.
Got it. But they're like looking at that GPS data, right? To analyze foot traffic and locations and travel trends and consumer behavior patterns and things like that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, the tech industry feeds off of data from your cell phone.
Okay, fantastic. So what do you do outside of GZI? What are your crazy passions?
I am an avid martial artist in my spare time. And so I do a lot of that, a lot of stretching, currently working on backbending and the splits. And so front splits and all of that was not enough.
Backbending into the splits?
Yeah, I saw this yoga video online of somebody doing that. It was the first time in my entire life. And I'm like, all right, I got to work up to this. So I spent, I think, probably about a year and a half like getting to the point where I could do all these forward folds and like some of the back leg grabs. It's sort of like a full backward fold is a goal of mine.
Wow. And so as an avid martial artist, is there any particular level or anything like that you're aspiring to?
So ideally, I would hope to reach mastery, with, you know, one day. But I think that the more I get out there, the more I realize that the people who are truly masters of their craft don't believe it. And so it's something I intend to do ideally for the rest of my life. And so, you know, when you look at things like some of the top martial artists in China were in their 90s. And so there is some guy who did Bagua that won a Wushu gold medal in his like late 80s. I think he was one of the oldest people in the world. So that's kind of my goal. If I can spin around, you know, at 90 and look graceful, that would be great. But I think that staying healthy is also important.
I think that's a great goal, Sean. Yeah. I think you're like those 90-year-old martial artists that are experts that don't believe in that as far as in alternative data. I think you're going to continue to evolve and be modest in your communication about that.
Thanks. I mean, there are some incredible people out there.
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you so much for this. And I will tell our listeners to contact Sean. Sean, how do people get a hold of you?
I think at this point, email is good. So sean.adler@gzi.finance is corporate. If you are truly inclined to, seanzhu@protonmail.com is my personal. I would start there. LinkedIn is one way to go, but not as efficient. And so, you know, for anything from free trials to just getting in touch, feel free to contact me.
Yes. And, you know, you mentioned that you're really very interested in listeners and people coming to you and asking you for what they need and how you can help them at this point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. I love that. Constant curiosity. You're looking for your next aha rush. Is that right?
It's a little bit of that. But the thing is that when it comes to tech business development, one of the most important things you can do is really build something that people want. And so it's important to kind of know what people like and how you can help them so you can design it. And it's a mutually beneficial cycle if you do it right. And that's really what I'm kind of going for at this point.
Yeah. You know, I had one other question for you based off of that. So I know you're working in the financial markets and with hedge funds and so forth, all around alternative data. But how do you see alternative data being very useful for enterprise and other companies that could tap into this to help them with their expansion?
So enterprise, aside from, you know, some of like the mailing list pamphlets and, you know, quant funds within the boutique side of investment banking, I know that there are analysts doing work with alternative data, especially biotech data, at groups like Bloomberg. And so I imagine that they may be packaging it, they may be trading with it. I honestly don't expect anybody at Bloomberg to tell me what they're doing, but, you know, we'll find out soon. And yeah.
Cool. All right, guys, that's a wrap. Thanks, Sean.
Anytime.
Guys, if you learned something today, or you want to find out more information, contact Sean and tell people about this podcast and tell people to go disrupt their markets with curiosity and a need for a rush. Thanks for listening to Disruption Interruption, where we transform lives, we change consumer behavior, we alter economics with the data, and we never accept the status quo. Ciao for now. Because we live in a highly litigious society, with America being one of the top litigious countries in the world, here's our legal disclaimer. This advice is not intended to be a substitute for professional public relations or legal advice. Do not disregard seeking professional legal healthcare or financial advice, or delay seeking professional PR or legal advice because of something you have heard here. Contact an attorney to obtain advice on any particular legal issue or problem. Use of this podcast or our website or any of its social media or email links do not create an agency-client relationship between JOTO PR and the user.